As I mentioned a moment ago, the idea of outlawing intergenerational wealth is not a new idea. Maybe outlawing is too strong a term. Perhaps it should be outlawed. Your views on it, I don't know. But Thomas Piketty, the French economist, probably best known proponent of this idea, they're people who've done nothing all their lives, who've, other than by the miracle of their birth, come into money that otherwise they would never have made in their lifetimes. They become terribly rich and stay terribly rich over generations. The capital, property managed, can lead to multiple generations of wealth. And many people find that idea reprehensible. You may say, hold on a second, but I work very hard so that I can give my children a better future than I have enjoyed myself. Pierre de Force threw stones at that particular beehive this week, and it sparked a really interesting debate. You might be working yourself to death in the belief that your children will have this better life. Perhaps you should be taking it easy and not working so hard in the first place. Two views on that this evening. Siya Beniza first. He's Finance and Operations Director at Political Economy South Africa. I mean, you're not against this idea, Siya, of, if not eradicating intergenerational wealth completely, certainly treating it differently to what we have seen happen so far.
Sure. Look, I definitely can see the need for it, economically speaking, given where the country comes from. I mean, we cannot say for everybody who's worked hard, and I think, you know, most South Africans are hardworking, that, you know, during the apartheid years, for over 60 years, have legislated inequality that had a negative impact on black people and a positive impact on white wealth and white livelihood, that is genuinely just off of the hard work of people. So I think there is a need to have some sort of recognition that the inequality we're in is not necessarily just as a result of either people not working hard enough or people not being smart enough to choose the right career choices, etc. It is partly, largely, as a result of the legacy of apartheid, which legislated the inequality. So I am definitely in support then of a way to use inheritance taxes as a way or means to ease some of that inequality. And I think it's a very sort of positive way to look at how we can deal with inequality, because, you know, increasingly governments coming under pressure on how they're going to resolve some of the socioeconomic challenges. Increasingly, you know, the budget deficit is becoming a rising pressure. And at the same time, government has found itself having to, or at least the ANC, consider at least policies such as a universal grant, etc. And I think this can be used as a mechanism to either part finance those types of initiatives because they deal with the inequality.
And this is, I mean, of course, the issue here is you tap into that wealth stream, you tap into that multi-generational wealth that came about as a result of privileged access to opportunity through apartheid, and you tap into it, and you then tax it, and you do well out of it. Maybe you prevent intergenerational wealth as an idea. You know, when one looks at the disincentives, however, that often these actions do result in. We've seen so many countries, you know, try and tax the rich more than everybody else or disproportionately. And what the rich invariably do, and I'm not talking about a middle class wealth, I'm talking about a super rich class, is they simply take their money elsewhere. They can afford high paid advisors who understand their way through the global financial system, and they find ways to avoid their obligations anyway.
Precisely. I think this is why a sort of inheritance approach that focuses on inheritance, for me, is a much more effective way to deal with the inequality. Because we find that a lot of wealthy individuals obviously have consultants dealing with their tax obligations, etc. They can find ways to either reduce their tax obligation, and it doesn't really help also that government in some instances has got policies that reinforce a sort of spatial inequalities that are a legacy of apartheid. If you think, for example, the number of half-empty office buildings that are in Sandton right now as a result of the city district development tax incentive, which allows people to claim up to 45% tax deductibles on the back of them developing properties within the inner city. And obviously these sort of incentives, although are helpful in developing the country, developing the property market, etc., reinforced in many ways the spatial inequalities of apartheid. And as you say, these are some of the mechanisms that the haves can have at their disposal in order to reduce the income and tax. So inevitably, government approaches to try and tax the wealthy more are undermined in many ways. But I think certainly an approach, and if you look at what Prof. DeVos is proposing, is quite progressive in its approach, in that it's saying, there can be exemptions made in terms of inheritance that's going to children or partners, for example, especially in instances where partners were financially dependent on, their spouse who might pass away, and then that inheritance falls into their control. But, you would put exemptions in that cases. And the idea here is to really focus on how we can redistribute, the mega wealth, the large end of the wealth spectrum in order to benefit all South Africans. And I think most people might understate, the benefits of a more equal society. But generally, it's a safer society, more prosperous, and actually much more productive society overall. And so, the inequality for me is quite a pressure when it looks at it from an economic perspective, in that we're stuck in a sort of long-term rut now where we don't know whether we're going to need investment to come in first to deal with aggregate demand problem, or is it the aggregate demand that's holding back investment? As such, we can't really go out of the growth problem that we're facing in South Africa. And really, until we deal with inequalities, we won't be able to, restart the economic engine, so to speak.
And then there's the other side of that argument, CEO. Final question to you this evening as to why on earth should I trust a state? If I'm multi-billionaire Motsepe, Rupert or Oppenheimer, why should I trust the state to do a better job with my wealth than perhaps I could, as we've seen in the big response, for example, by those families to the way in which they're assisting with the fight against COVID-19? For example, and the state has hardly in the last decade or so covered itself with any degree of glory to earn our trust as a society.
So, and I think this is part of the most divisive part of how we can deal with inequality in South Africa. So, because politically, the people have got no reason whatsoever to give up that wealth. It works in their favor. It works for them. But I think people need to look at how such a policy would take place. So I think they can be done in such a way that it is very transparent. So, for example, if you look at the reporting that the National Treasury does on its tax income, the property tax income lines, personal income tax, you could have an inheritance income tax line that's quite, that could be reported quite transparently as the rest of the tax that we get. And if government then can channel that to either direct grants, I think this is the big thing that most people are perhaps averted to or worried about, that the money might end up in people's hands that will not spend it in a way that reinforces their social mobility, or try to spend on education as opposed to consumption on other goods, etc. And I think it doesn't necessarily matter as long as we can get the aggregate demand in the country up and deal with that aggregate demand problem that's squarely sitting at the foot of inequality. And I think we also need to look at it from a balanced perspective. Alternatives to this is what we're stuck with now in terms of trying to review the constitution to enable government to expropriate without compensation. And really, that for me is a worse of policy. We've seen it being implemented perhaps even with poor or relatively different levels of planning in Zimbabwe, for example, and it didn't work. Inevitably, policies that look at the restructuring of the constitution, especially on touching lines and personal private property, are definitely going to send investors away, definitely going to spook investors away. So I think a look at it from an inheritance point of view and looking at it as an inheritance tax that can be done in a progressive manner allows us to then partly avoid those problems or dealing with the challenge that we're now faced with. How do we amend the constitution to enable the government to expropriate without compensation as a mechanism to deal with inequality? We could still be able to deal with inequality, even partially so, through a sort of market, pro-market approach. And I think inheritance taxes, as global examples in Europe, where the inheritance inheritance taxes are around 40 to 45%, and elsewhere, show that there's definitely a need for this, not only in developing countries like South Africa, but even developed countries where these taxes are a norm.
I think that's a very important point, Siya. Thank you. Siya Beniza, Finance and Operations Director, Political Economy South Africa. Stuart Theobald, Financial Analyst and Chairman at IntelliDex. There are countries, other countries, developed countries, where inheritance taxes are considerably higher than South Africa's maximum inheritance tax at the moment, which was increased in 2018 from 20 to 25%. We do have a low tax threshold in South Africa when it comes to inheritance, Stuart.
It's a controversial point, Bruce, and it differs from society to society of what we think acceptable levels are. You know, there are different areas of argument. There's an argument about the principle, and then there's the argument about the pragmatics, what's actually possible and what the economic effects are. You know, I think the principle draws out competing moral instincts. We do think that there's something wrong that you can have two people experience substantially different qualities of lives just because of who their parents were. And that instinct has been common in moral philosophy since as long as things have been written down. You know, Plato's view in the Republic was that children should be taken away from their mothers at birth and raised by specialist child raisers in an ideal society. And the parents should not even know who their children are, because it's not only about inherited wealth, but all the other attributes that you gain from your parents that leads to this injustice that society's faced because of who people's parents were. Now, Plato's proposal sounds, I think, to most of us as quite unacceptable, that we think there's something special about a parent-child bond, and where children are beneficiaries of good parents or parents who just haven't had advantages themselves. We think that's just a case of luck more than anything, and not something the state should intervene in. So we kind of accept a level of inequality because of other competing moral principles that we think are important, like the relationship between parents and children. So the principal argument, I think, is not clear. And when it comes to inheritance, we don't think that children should be kicked out of the family home because a parent died. You know, we think that there are certain things that are right to ensure that are passed on to children, that parents should have the right to pass on. And every society, I think, broadly accepts there's some threshold at which it's okay to pass wealth on to your children. The arguments then become what one should do beyond that. And that differs. You know, the United States, I think you can transfer over $5 million tax-free to your children. With South Africa, the thresholds are much lower. It kind of depends on background conditions and wealth levels in society. I also think there are very serious practical problems with inheritance taxes that create all kinds of odd unintended consequences. You know, you're taxing money, but parents, of course, can spend that money before they leave it in an estate. They can spend it on making sure their children have many other kinds of advantages, you know, sending them to the best school.
No, exactly. I mean, this is such a thorny subject, Stuart. I mean, again, one looks at a society like South Africa, though, which is desperately abnormal by any measure anywhere in the world. And somehow, whatever that solution is, or whatever we choose to use, the mechanisms we choose to address it, we need to find solutions sooner rather than later, or at least contributions that we can find agreeable for not only a stable society, but a fairer society.
Yeah, and I think we've got to be clear about the objectives here. Our problem is inequality and poverty. So let's focus on those. Is inheritance tax really going to deliver a major movement in inequality? I really doubt it. You know, once you accept a threshold of a certain amount, the amount you're actually going to collect from the inheritance tax becomes very small, because it's a pyramid with a wide base. And the tax that you're collecting on the top of that base is not going to amount to much at the end of the day. So are we? Is it really an effective way to deal with inequality? I would need to be convinced.
My thanks to Stuart Theobald, financial analyst and chairman at IntelliDex. Also to Siya Beniza, Finance and Operations Director, Political Economy South Africa.